back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Why am I playing Leonard Cohen about a crack and everything that lets the light in? Because my next guest, Ambassador Winston Lord, used that in his brand new book, Kissinger on Kissinger, Reflections on Diplomacy, Grand Strategy, and Leadership, a collection of six conversations with the former Secretary of State and real giant of history, Henry Kissinger. Ambassador Lord, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
It is great to have you on. This is an amazing book. I'm so deep into it. You're going to have to come back. But tell the audience what I already know, that you and KT McFarland had this amazing opportunity to tease out of Dr. Kissinger an oral history that, thank goodness, from a historical perspective, you did.
Yes, this is his first and only oral history. KT and I ran a series of video panels on Nixon foreign policy. And when we finished, I suggested we get Henry to do a final reflective one-off all interview. We had to talk a minute. We'd never done one. After doing one, it was so fantastic, and he himself was so enthralled that we coaxed him to do five more, and that resulted in this book. And I want to make the point that at the age of 93 or 4 when he made these interviews, to recall events 40 or 50 years earlier, not only the strategic guidelines and the tactical milestones, but some personal anecdotes that were revealing and stunning personal portraits, is an amazing performance. And we barely cleaned up the transcript. What you see in the book is 95% what he said, with a few repetitions and a different structure. That's all we did.
On being named the new president and CEO of the Nixon Foundation, I got together with KT McFarland, and I begged her to go back and talk to him again. I don't know if he's willing, Ambassador Lord, but if he did, I asked her, go get him to comment on the first term of the Trump presidency, because there are so many similarities between the era of Nixon and the era of Trump. Do you agree with me on that assumption, Mr. Ambassador?
Well, I half agree. There are some similarities in the sense that our two big challenges in the 70s, which occupy a lot of the book, were Russia and China. And, of course, they are today, and Trump has correctly labeled them strategic competitors. I have to say I'm biased, but I think the Nixon-Kissinger strategic approach has to be distinguished from a more ad hoc transactional approach of Trump. But the challenges, although poised in different ways, with China now much stronger, of course, than it was in the 70s, and Russia in many ways weaker, are different.
Now, there are two things I want to stress. Because you stress them. In 3 points in the book, Dr. Kissinger, and you leave these in, said it was President Nixon's belief that there's no sense in doing a half measure. Go for the whole thing, because if you're going to take all the heat for doing half, you might as well do 100% of a bold initiative. Would you explain to the audience that mindset?
Sure. Go back to the early 70s. We had fought the Chinese 22 years earlier in Korea. We had had no contact, mutual hostility and isolation. As a border clash between the Chinese and the Russians, we were dealing with the Russians in a lot of issues without much success. And Nixon and Kissinger decided to side with the weaker power, namely China, against the Soviets to make sure that they didn't have hegemonic success in expanding their territory. Nixon went all in, namely not only indicating to the Chinese we're ready for a new relationship, but to get the Soviets' attention so that they would deal with this as well. And he took the step of sending Kissinger on a secret trip. I was fortunate to be with him in July 71, and then went to China a year later. Now, you know, conventional wisdom looking back says, well, this is going to happen at some point anyway. It's not really, was not that easy. We had had this tremendous estrangement from China, and we had, as I said, fought with them. In many ways, Americans thought they were more radical than the Soviets. But Nixon felt, rather than taking half steps, we make a bold move, and it paid off. But it demonstrated both his vision and his courage.
I want to read from page 15. This is Dr. Kissinger talking to Winston Lord. Dr. Kissinger says, Nixon approached from the point of view of, what is the ultimate solution we're trying to get here? He was restless with tactical discussions, though, of course, he took an interest in them. He felt the president's role was to achieve the final objective. So, from the beginning, Nixon would address the question, what are we trying to do here? He had one maxim that I often cite, which is you pay the same price for doing something halfway as for doing it completely. That's the third time he's mentioned that in his first conversation with you. So you might as well do it completely. It characterizes many of Nixon's decisions. At critical points, people would say, oh, look at these crazy guys. They went on alert at that situation. When Nixon made these moves, like going on alert, they were calculated to bring the other side to a point where it would recognize that things were getting very dangerous and where it didn't want to slide into crisis by taking marginal steps. Now, Ambassador Lord, I see that vis-a-vis Iran right now, and I see that vis-a-vis the Chinese trade war. Do you see that in those two situations?
I do see elements of it. On the Chinese trade war, Trump has correctly blown the whistle on Chinese mercantilism and protectionism, ripping us off over the last 20 or 30 years, and he deserves credit for that, tougher than his predecessors. I do think some of his tactics are wrong. I think the key issue, and some in the administration recognize this, is technology, that China trying to dominate future key technologies, forcing our companies to turn over technology, subsidizing their companies, and so on, as well as intellectual property stealing and cyber theft. These, to me, are more important than specific tariffs, important as they are. So I think I would adjust our tactics. I give him credit for getting the Chinese attention. Namely, he ought to go back and rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this major economic deal. Japan has now gotten 11 countries to go ahead with it in our absence. This puts pressure on the Chinese because the Japanese and the Europeans are as mad at the Chinese as we are. And so by pulling out of that and by picking fights with our allies, he lessened the multilateral pressures on Beijing. Now, there's a good sign there. Recently, he has put off auto import decisions with Japan and Europe, so we don't have a fight with them right now. And it looks like we're going to get a North American trade agreement. So that means we can collectively deal with the Chinese. Also, I would focus mostly the tariff war on state-owned enterprises, which are not in China's interest. They're getting away from the more entrepreneurial capitalist system that got them where they are in the first place. But they are the ones who steal the most intellectual property and get the most subsidies. And so I think we ought to particularly hit them, even though they're sometimes hard to define, which I think would hit the right targets and would be in China's own long-term self-interest.
Oh, you're Ambassador Lord, that's exactly what ought to happen. We're going to spend some time talking about that at the library. I hope you will come and join us for that. Let me turn to the chapter.
By the way, on the library, the library has a lot to do with this, as does the Nixon Foundation, which you're the new head of. That's how this all started. The foundation sponsored these panels that KT and I ran, the video interviews of Kissinger, of the panels before Kissinger, can be seen on various websites, and I'm going out to the library in September to speak to the people out there.
I look forward to seeing you there and welcoming you. Now, Mr. Ambassador, Chapter 8 on the Middle East crisis of the Yom Kippur War contains some incredibly striking, to me, very new revelations, and I'll boil it down to this. Even as the tank battle raged in the Sinai and the second Egyptian army was cut off, Dr. Kissinger, with you at his side, and President Nixon were planning for the peace initiative. They knew they had to get it started in the middle of the shots being firing. In other words, war doesn't end diplomacy. It may open the door to diplomacy. I really had not known it had begun that early, and my hat's off to you and Dr. Kissinger, and it's just very well described in Kissinger on Kissinger.
Well, to make your point, Sadat launched an attack on Israel not as an end in itself, but to get Israel's attention and our attention for negotiations and to remove himself from the grasp of the Soviet Union. Kissinger and Nixon were brilliant in their timing. What happened was Sadat and the Egyptians made initial advances against Israel because they were caught by surprise. Israel fought back, regained ground, had surrounded the Egyptian Eighth Army, at which point Kissinger and I and others went to Moscow to freeze that situation with a ceasefire for the following reasons. For the first time, there was psychological balance on both sides for negotiations. For the first time, Israel had been somewhat sobered up by the initial advances by Egypt, and so they recognized that maybe some negotiations would be in its self-interest. And the first time Egypt and Sadat were not in a situation of humiliation because they had made some advances. But if their army had been wiped out, then we would have been back to the status quo before, with one side humiliated and the other side triumphant. So Kissinger, working with the Russians, froze that situation, got negotiations started, and this resulted in three shuttles, two with Egypt and one with Syria, which made the initial advances in the Middle East.
I've got to tell people, they've got to read Kissinger on Kissinger by Winston Lord, with the introduction by Dr. Kissinger, for a lot of reasons. One last quick one. It is interesting how your team, and you were P at State and before that at the NSC, used Elliot Richardson and Richard Helms giving speeches that might otherwise not have been noticed, but the Russians noticed them, the Chinese noticed them. It doesn't always have to be the president speaking to send a message, Ambassador Lord. Lots of messages can be sent, and the people we're trying to reach don't miss them, do they?
Absolutely. And in addition to those, we took some unilateral steps, modest, relaxing some trade restrictions with China. They didn't have to reciprocate, but they could notice that we were trying to head in a different direction. It began to prepare the American, Chinese, and other publics for the new direction we were headed in. Even as so that was one challenge after 20 years of hostility, was to show a change in direction and to get the Chinese attention. But we also did it with the speeches you mentioned, making clear where we wanted to head. And then finally, we had to find a way to get in touch with the Chinese, and we went through various secret channels and ended up with Pakistan. So it took 2 years to get from February 69, where Nixon, 1 week after his inauguration, sent a memo to Kissinger saying, I want to get in touch with the Chinese. They both saw the need for this. So we had to move both secretly to talk to them and publicly to send signals. And I think it was, I'm a little biased, but it's a brilliant scenario that was unfolded and resulted in a geopolitical earthquake.
It really is, and it's so well captured in the brand new book, Kissinger on Kissinger, Reflections on Diplomacy, Grand Strategy, and Leadership by Winston Lord. Ambassador Lord, thank you for joining us. I'll see you out at the Nixon Library in the fall. And in the meantime, everyone get this book and be ready, because it has so many lessons for anyone in the foreign policy field, as one would expect from Winston Lord.